Good morning. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tovin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun, and my co-host, as always, is Sun political reporter Andrew Doman.
Good morning.
Joining us today is State Senator Tick Sagerblum, one of the proponents of the revised medical marijuana statutes passed this spring in the legislature. As the state gets set to implement the medical marijuana dispensary regulations, there are many questions about how the system will work. Thanks for joining us, Senator.
Thank you.
And earlier this year, you actually accompanied by Andrew, you took a tour of dispensaries in Arizona. And I was just wondering how that informed your decisions and what you learned on that trip.
Well, I guess primarily it just showed that it is doable, that it is definitely a business, that there's nothing about it that would offend anyone, that it could be coexist with other businesses, and just nothing to be afraid of.
And, you know, Senator, before we took that trip down there, I guess more than a dozen years ago, the voters put access to medical marijuana in the state constitution. So voters in Nevada voted on it twice. It got in the constitution. And since then, it seems like there hasn't really been any meaningful way to actually exercise that constitutional right. Why did it kind of take so long for your bill to come up in there to be a real solution to this?
Well, I'm sure there's several reasons, one of which, you know, politicians are not known for their bravery, and there is obviously a minority of voters who just think that marijuana is a gateway drug, and along with law enforcement have just vigorously opposed this. Also, the fact that it takes two-thirds of the legislature to pass it, so that raises a pretty high threshold. But I think and then the final issue is that just I think there's been a sea change in public opinion in the last couple of years where not just the voters' perceptions, which obviously approved it back in 2000, but the politicians' perception of voters has flipped. And so now you have basically a large segment of the Republican Party as well as a large segment of the Democratic Party, both of which favor medical marijuana and probably favor legalizing marijuana in general.
Why is that? I mean, this is a substance that at one point was legal at the federal level, then it swung back and it became, you know, very, very criminalized. What happened? Why now the swing back toward toward legalization?
My own personal opinion is that you have the 60s generation basically becoming senior citizens, and those individuals older than we are basically are dying off. So that if you look at the voting numbers, it's the 60s generation, which was the primary, the baby boom bubble, that is primary voters. And frankly, we all experienced it in the 60s and 70s and realized that it may not be desirable, but it's certainly not, no one died from marijuana.
Right.
You also have then this new generation, the new bubble, who basically are libertarians when it comes to gay marriage and drug use and other things, saying, you know, just stay away from me. If you want to talk about taxes and government, the role of government, we'll talk about it, but don't even worry about interfering with my personal life. And so I think you have the older generation and the young generation kind of merging on this issue.
And I mean, you know, you're someone who came up in the 60s and who has already openly said, you know, that you've used to smoke marijuana. You know, do you see a time at some point in Nevada where marijuana is just legal outright, like it's going to be in Colorado and Washington State?
I do. In fact, I can see it very clearly being passed by the voters in 2016, and it would probably take a year to get that system up and running like it's taken in Washington State and in Colorado, but by the fall of 2017, I could see a full-scale legalization, you know, controlled, taxed, for sale in regulated dispensaries, and it would be illegal to grow it on your own, maybe, or to grow it in vast quantities on your own. But it would be legal, and people in Nevada and people that are visiting Nevada would be able to smoke it without a fear of being prosecuted.
So 2016, why 2016? Is that something that the legislature would put on the ballot that the people would have to do themselves?
My understanding is that there are groups looking to put it on the ballot for us to have to vote on in 2017. So it was like the margins tax where you put it on the ballot and then But anyway, that we'll have to see how that works out. But I just see that if you know, unless something dramatic negatively happens in Washington and Colorado, I think that's where things are going to go. And also, we have to be sure that when we implement medical marijuana, that we do it in a safe, legitimate way. And I think that's from all indications, that's what's going to happen. But of course, the proof will be in the pudding.
And speaking of the implementation of the plans, did you in forming the new legislature legislation for medical marijuana dispensaries, did you model it after Arizona or another state, or did you take the best pieces from different policies you saw elsewhere?
I think we took the best pieces, and I've been told by people from all around the country that our legislation is the best legislation in the country. We have a for-profit model, which everyone thinks is fantastic. We have a limited number, so there's not going to be the huge competition. We have restrictions on how the parents, so it's not going to be intrusive or interfere with people's lives. But at the end of the day, it's very workable, and the people that are in companies that are coming from around the country that want to come to Nevada based upon our law is phenomenal.
And what's the system in place for legitimate licensed dispensaries? How do they get their marijuana?
Well, they can. There's three licenses under our law. There's the grow license, there's the cooking license, and there's the selling license. They can, if they want, have a growing license too, so they can grow their own and sell it. Or there will be grow houses that actually put it on the market, and if you have a dispensary, you could buy it from them. I'm not sure how much in the weeds you want to get to it as far as how they actually start with marijuana, because that's going to be the hardest problem, in my opinion. Because in the law, you can't transport seeds or plants across state lines, so we had to make it clear that the initial plants are going to come from existing growers, who people have medical marijuana cards, who grow for themselves or who grow as caregivers. And that may be a limited, finite source as far as to start the production. Once it gets going, obviously it'll be very easy to obtain it. But the first grows are going to definitely be small and hard to come by.
Well, that was one of my questions, because I know with the law the way it was, people who are patients now, they can have kind of a limited sort of home grow operation where they have what is it? I think seven plants. And,
right.
So how does the big business dispensary get their legal medical marijuana? Do they have to go get seven here, seven there, times, however many to just get started up?
Well, the plants actually—it's very easy to graft them. So, if you just had one plant, you could take that plant and then cut leaves off or stems off and create another plant. So, just from one plant, you can very quickly get a lot of plants. But it does take a long time. I think it's 12 weeks or 9 weeks to grow from beginning to budding. So, it's going to be a slow process, particularly initially. And my real concern is that around the country they have lots of different varieties for different types of ailments, and I'm not sure that each dispensary will be able to get access, or each grow house will get access to all those different varieties, again, because of the fact that we're limited to people who are to obtain plants from people who are already growing in Nevada. And I just don't know how sophisticated our current growers are. Do they have that variety of plants that you would find in Colorado or California? It depends on who you talk to.
Right. And speaking of California, I actually moved from California a couple of years ago, and obviously their system was...
So you're a pothead too?
Much, much more advanced, of course. I'm from California, right? You have to be. And out there in Santa Cruz, they actually, they even had a testing facility where, it was a lab, and they would go through and they would show all the chemicals and what levels they are, what the cannabinoids and the different types, and make sure it didn't have fungus or mold on it and that type of. I mean, what kind of system do we have set up here to make sure that the marijuana is being sold is safe and it has if they're telling you a THC content or some sort of cannabinoid content, we know that's accurate.
Well, actually, that's one of our best aspects of our bill, because we mandate that all marijuana before it is sold, has to be tested. And they have, as you said, they have these electronic machines that can test for pesticides, for things that are other than marijuana. They can test the THC quantity. And so everything will be scientifically approved, and their license is actually for the testing facilities. So they will be applying to the state also to qualify to be testing. And we've had lots of inquiries from companies around the country that want to come do that also. So it's that part is very exciting. I, of course, back in my day, you never knew where the stuff came from. And most of it was seeds and stems anyway. But the reality is this stuff is very high quality, and we were able to actually put a seal of approval from Nevada saying this stuff is 100% marijuana, and here's how much THC is available. And that's particularly important when you have a product like a brownie or a cookie or a candy, something like that, where you want to be sure to know how much you're actually buying or ingesting.
That's pretty incredible, a seal of the state of Nevada on a marijuana product. I mean, you had
my picture on it.
You had in your office there, right?
Battleborn Bud or something like that.
You had in your office there the poster from the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas movie where it said,
maybe marijuana, we could put that on there.
Marijuana 20 years to life. So, as it shows, we've come a pretty long ways from that.
Well, if you're old enough, you know, everything comes around full circle. And so I just think it was so much fun as somebody from the 60s that we're able to go back and revisit all those fights we had back then, and I think we're going to prevail. It's just, you know, no one wants to see anyone drink alcohol or take drugs, but the reality is that's what people do. And if they're going to do it, they should be able to do it safely and legally. And in my opinion, that's what we're going to accomplish.
And there's tons of people who have been interested in this. You know, lots of businessmen, lots of very legitimate lawyers and law practices and investors.
And doctors.
And doctors, too. But where's the gaming industry on this?
Well, I honestly have not seen any interest in ownership, and I think that's because they're so tightly regulated by the feds right now that they're very leery to get involved in anything which is illegal under federal law. But on the other side, I think they're probably just, very excited to think that this is going to be available to tourists, because anything we can do to attract people to come to Nevada and have a good time, that's going to benefit them too. So I think, if not secretly, or not openly, at least secretly, they're rubbing their hands and smiling.
So how's that going to work, that part where the tourists can come over here and shop and buy the medical marijuana in our Las Vegas dispensaries?
Well, that another thing is we're in the forefront. In fact, we're the only state, to my knowledge, we were at the time we passed the law, I don't know if that's changed, where we have reciprocity with other states that have medical marijuana programs. The problem was, what we wanted to do initially was we wanted to have our computers talk to the computers in another state to verify that this person does, in fact, have a medical marijuana card. But as soon as you cross state lines, then again, you're violating federal law. So to get around that, what we've done is just created an affidavit system where you come into the dispensary, you show them your medical marijuana card, you show them your driver's license, you sign an affidavit saying that I'm a bona fide patient and I haven't used or haven't purchased whatever amount is the law in that state within the past 30 days or 20 days or 1 week or whatever. So I'm eligible to buy, and the dispensary will then go ahead and allow you to be just like a Nevadan. And so for a 1 month period, you'll be able to buy, was it 2.5 ounces or whatever the quantity is.
Doesn't that leave room open, though, for like fake cards? I mean, if someone from Oregon comes in with a medical marijuana card and the dispensary worker in Las Vegas is not really familiar with with the look of Oregon's cards, they just have to sign a paper saying, you know, I promise this is real.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, this is all pretty much, if you go in there even with a legitimate medical marijuana card, the key is the person who's purchasing going to use it, or are they going to sell it? And that's what we're really trying to prevent. We don't want these dispensaries to just be another way to get marijuana and then go back out on the street and sell it to people who don't have medical conditions, or to particularly to people who are not, shouldn't be having it, such as, juveniles. But that is just a problem we're going to have to deal with. Other states that have dealt with this haven't seen an uptick in illegal usage. And frankly, I mean, what, no harm, no foul kind of thing. If somebody comes from Oregon and has a fake card, they want to purchase marijuana and we're taxing it, then I say more power to us.
And I was wondering about, you mentioned that this is, you know, a for-profit system for the dispensaries, and what is the tax structure on the dispensaries, and where's that money going to go? Is it just general tax funds, or is it targeted towards something?
Well, you're kind of pushing me here as far as, I can't remember exactly, but I think what we do is we go first to, well, first off, on this, the growers, there's a 2% excise tax. So when they sell their product to a dispensary or to a cooking facility, there's a 2% tax added. When the cooking facility sells whatever they have baked, there's a 2% excise tax on that. Then it goes to the dispensary. When the dispensary sells it, there's the regular 8-cent sales tax plus a 2% excise tax. So there's basically the regular 8-cent sales tax, which would go to most things, plus a 4% excise tax for sure, and possibly a 6% excise tax. But the money goes first to the regulators, so the state who has to develop the system to regulate this. If there's any law enforcement costs, it goes to law enforcement, but then the excess would go to schools. And I'm hoping that there will be enough money there at schools that the schools will see a difference, and of course that will then encourage everybody to think this is a worthy endeavor.
Right. All right. You're listening to Neon Ian on 91.5 KUNV, and our guest this morning is State Senator Tick Sagerblum. We're talking the implementation of new rules governing medical marijuana dispensaries. Now, Senator, you've mentioned before that you'd like to pardon past marijuana offenses for people with medical marijuana cards because of that sort of catch-22 where it was really hard to actually obtain marijuana for people who had the cards. And I was wondering if you're also concerned about in terms of looking at broader sentencing reform and prosecution for simple marijuana possession.
I would love to do that. And I'm not sure, since I've raised that issue, a lot of people come forward and said, first off, let's issue can't pardon, that's the governor's function and whatever. So I'm not sure how we go about it, but at the end of the day, I view it just like prohibition. You know, there was a movement in the country back in the, not a movement, there was a constitutional amendment back in the 20s where they made alcohol illegal. It turned out it didn't work, and then it was legalized, and everybody went on their merry way. And I think that's the same thing with marijuana. The problem is when you have a drug conviction, even possession, that the stigma of that, as far as student loans, there's all kinds of things you cannot do with a conviction for drugs, even though it is just marijuana. So I'm thinking if anything we can do in Nevada to destigmatize people who basically, in my opinion, have done nothing wrong other than just like in prohibition, having a drink when it was declared to be illegal, we should try to help those people. So I'll be looking at all kinds of avenues, and we'll have a little, maybe hope our interim criminal justice committee will look at that too, as what we could do for the people. But I just think that's so important. We have such a large segment of our society, and I hate to say it, but it's not primarily black and brown, but it certainly is. Those communities have suffered more than white communities for something, again, which in my opinion is not something we should be punishing.
Do you feel there's support in the local law enforcement community to be able to maybe focus on other crimes if marijuana possession was, say, something that was like a ticketable offense or something like that?
There is. I mean, it's a mixed bag. I mean, there are certainly people in the law enforcement community who still think marijuana is basically heroin. And, you know, if you even mention the word, they get upset and say, we can't stop. We have to enforce this tougher and tougher. But it's kind of like the military-industrial complex. You know, you build up a whole group of institutions which make their living trying to stamp out marijuana. So anytime you take away that aspect, that's going to be tough. And part of the problem, frankly, is that our laws, you know, if you bust a house for, you know, somebody rents a house, uses it as a grow house, and the cops come in and bust it, they can actually take the house away from the owner through the forfeiture laws because of the drugs were being grown there. So and if you stop a vehicle or a truck and there's marijuana in the truck, you can confiscate the truck or the vehicle. You can confiscate cash. So anyway, there's a whole industry built up around taking these resources from people who have done nothing other than have marijuana, trying to grow it or possess it. And that money you would also be taking out of their pockets. But at the end of the day, most law enforcement people I've talked to realize that the marijuana thing's a losing battle. They'd rather focus on serious issues. And if we can decriminalize it, then that also takes out that criminal element. So to the extent that this is coming from across the border or it's being grown in the hills, all those things would be unnecessary, and all those resources could be focused on white-collar crime or burglaries or things which would actually make you and my life better.
And Senator, I want to sort of change topics a little bit. I mean, you just mentioned this sort of law enforcement industrial complex, but there's another sort of big industry that you're kind of taking on. What work have you been doing? Can you talk a little bit about that work that you've been doing with regard to the prescription drug painkillers?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ironies, at least from my perspective, is that while we have made marijuana illegal and punished people and put them in jail for trying to sell something or use something, which, as I said earlier, to my knowledge, no one's ever died from smoking marijuana, we have endorsed through our medical profession the sales of prescription drugs, which are basically heroin. The Oxycontin and those type of drugs are basically a morphine product, which is a Schedule I drug. And what's happened is that the manufacturer went out and publicized to primarily doctors, but everyone else, and said, look, this stuff is not addictive, and you can take it as prescribed, and no harm, no foul. And it turned out what we were doing is we were addicting, really millions of people through prescription drugs. And then when if you have an injury and they get the prescription, when the prescription runs out and you're addicted, what do? You turn to crime in lots of cases, or you steal from other sources, or you go out and purchase heroin. What I'm trying to do is to figure out a way that we can stop the prescribing of opioids legally, because that, at least so far, has resulted in people becoming addicted. Because of that addiction, lives have been destroyed, families have been destroyed. It's the number two cause of death in the United States, at least as far as... I mean, it's a terrible, terrible addiction and problem. So I'm trying to figure out a way that we can punish or discourage the use of opioids, prescription opioids, and then also have the manufacturers and perhaps even the doctors who overly prescribe it be responsible for the cost to society. I don't want to be the one who has to pay to have somebody be locked up for 20 years or to go through rehab. I think that ought to be the responsibility of the manufacturer of the drug.
Well, and you've been talking with some of those manufacturers and drug companies, right? And they've at least been
They've responded. It's been kind of half-hearted, and I think they're making so much money that they're just figuring anything they can do to talk to us and keep us at bay. While they make another $500 million, they're happy to do that. I'm actually going down to California end of the month to have a joint news conference and meeting with the representative from Craigslist, because the Senator Lou from Torrance and I have jointly asked Craigslist to stop posting on their websites the sale of these prescription drugs, which obviously is illegal. But that's one of the things you can find when you go online. You can find people who are advertising, if you want Oxycontin, here's how much it is, and I'll get it to you. So anyway, there's lots of ways to go at it. I'm not sure there's a perfect way, but I think to the extent we can just publicize it and also discourage doctors from prescribing it, that hopefully will avoid people becoming addicted, because I've seen so many clients and friends and family, friends of family, that whose lives have literally been destroyed because of they started on opioids by a doctor, and then because of addiction headed into some kind of life of crime.
But what should the guy do who's in severe chronic pain for whatever reason, who comes into the doctor's office?
Smoke marijuana.
So they just need to get their medical marijuana card then.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, this is hard to believe, but I've been told by hundreds of people, really, that it does actually, marijuana does actually work on chronic pain. Now, why that would be, I don't know, and if that's true, I don't know either, but people have told me that they were addicted to an opioid, and to get off it, they went to marijuana.
Right.
Which, if true, is phenomenal, because marijuana is so much better for you than... I mean, again, no drug is desirable, and I would discourage anyone from using any kind of drug or alcohol. But if you're going to do it, marijuana, in my opinion, is one of the least harmful drugs there is.
Right, and if you just look at sort of the profile of the average medical marijuana patient in Nevada, it's probably like a 45-year-old, 50-year-old guy with severe chronic pain, so it seems like people are using it for
a lot of veterans. They've been very big, strong supporters of my bill. So it's for I don't know why, but it seems to work.
Have you also been looking at the doctors, though? Are there doctors who are, you know, over-prescribing painkillers, OxyContin?
Well, that's what we're trying to get at. Now, to our credit in Nevada, we have enacted laws in the past which keep records of how much of these opioids are being prescribed and what doctors they are, and trying to identify doctors who may be overly prescribing it. And also to avoid the doctor shopping, where a patient will go to three different doctors and get three different opioid prescriptions and then get them all filled. So the pharmacies have a thing where they have to report to the state, and the state keeps track of multiple prescriptions. So we're making progress in that end. But, you know, I think the main thing is we just not need to make it everyone realize that before you prescribe an opioid, it should be for a short duration and only necessary. I mean, just because you have a tooth removed doesn't mean you should have a 90 OxyContin pills prescribed to you.
And Senator, you know, I don't know if you know this, but our former host was Patrick Kulikin, the Sun columnist, and he was a big fan of yours, and he would like nothing more to know about it. When are you going to announce your run for governor?
Well, Patrick will be the first one to know. And I have to thank him for encouraging me, but I think, frankly, I've reached my level of competence, and hopefully I'm being very productive in my role in the state Senate. I have to say it really has been fun to serve in the legislature. There's a lot of issues that I still have to work on, and primarily I want to work on raising the profile of the legislature and making it more functional, such as having annual sessions and getting rid of the two-thirds vote, getting rid of term limits, and just lots of internal structural things. That Nevada is we're a very strange state in that we're a small state, but we're 3 million people now. We're not, you know, the 500,000 that we used to be. We're right next to the biggest state in the union, the most progressive state in the union, California, and yet and most of us came from California, but yet we seem to not want to be like California, and I don't understand why that is. To me, we should be like a Vermont, where we're progressive, we're small enough that we can do all kinds of things. We have a captive industry, gaming, that could pay a huge amount of money to make our quality of life better. We have mining, which again we could tax and to improve our quality of life. Have a top rate university system, a top rate public school system, top rate highways. We should have solar energy. We shouldn't have any electricity other than just we should generate it on our own houses. I mean, there's just so much we can do, and yet we're stuck in this time warp where we're afraid to do anything, or we're basically we can't do anything because it takes two-thirds votes, and the way the system currently works, Northern Nevada basically prevents Southern Nevada from doing what it needs to do.
But you know, you talk about Nevada being a progressive state, but all indications seem to be that we'll have a Republican governor, for the next 4 years, 5 years, and who then, if not you, is going to run as a Democrat?
Steve Sisolak's my man.
Okay, that's all the time we have this morning. We've been speaking with State Senator Tick Sagerblum. Thanks for joining us, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Right. You've been listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. This I'm Tobin LePan, your host, and my co-host is Andrew Doman. Our producer is Richard Riegel. See you next week.